Hello, my friends. It's Thursday, April 24th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We've got quite the show to bring to you today. First, we're going to take a look at what mass deportations look like with a couple of horrific stories. Then we've got a look at our Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., calling for a registry of autistic people and more white babies. Then we'll take a look at one of the octogenarian Democratic leadership who has announced his retirement and give you a catch-up on the others who are retiring. Then we take a look at the city of New York, where disgraced former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is leading in the polls and may take that election there. Oh my God, I can't believe he's back. Then we look overseas to the Vatican, where the Pope is being chosen by the papal conclave. We'll take a look at what's going on there. Then in Idaho, news from anti-Tesla protests, where there was a hit and run to talk about. And then in the Radical Rant, I'll give you my look at the oncoming economic tsunami we're all going to have to deal with this summer. All that coming up on the Radical Rush Show. But before we get to that, all that serious stuff, I want to follow up on something I did yesterday. When I got up in the morning and got ready to do the show, I saw a post from a guy on Blue Sky that had the germ, the seed, the kernel, if you will, of a anti-J.D. Vance parody song. And I was so inspired that I fleshed out the lyrics and did a quick rough draft on yesterday's podcast. Well, I played it for my lady love, and she thought it was so funny. She said, "You really need to work that up and post it on YouTube and get it so I can share it on Facebook and such." And well, you know, it was Lady Love's 60th birthday yesterday, and I have to do everything she tells me on her birthday. So I did. After we got back from our lunch at Killer Burger in Medford, I sat down here at the studio and put together a video and a re-recorded version of my Altogether Blame JD parody song. You can catch the video on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/RadicalRuss, or just go to my website at RadicalRuss.com if you'd like to find the video and share it out there. Love to make this go viral. I put a lot of work into it, but I can play the audio for you. Here it's got a few video clips in it as well from JD Vance himself. Here it is, the world premiere of Altogether Blame JD. Here come on JD, he goes off to Italy. He got too much eyeline. He killed Holy Father. He got so mad, and he'll say why. Zelensky won't say thank you, and he won't wear a tie.
You said thank you once. That entire meeting. No, in this entire meeting, you said thank you. You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October, offered some words of appreciation for the United States of America.
He's owned on Twitter. He break trophy football. He got mocked in Greenland. He fuck leather sofa. He say, "I know you make fun of me. One thing I can tell you is you got tyranny all together right now. Blame JD."
Too many times in the United States as well. An asylum seeker, often a young man in his mid-20s, already known to police, rams a car into a crowd and shatters a community.
His wife is Indian, but he hates the immigrant. He got MAGA platform. He won Hateful Cracker. He wrote book about growing up hick. Grandma said he's straight because he won't suck a dick. All together right now. Blame JD.
I'm a never Trump guy. I never liked him. And I've noticed this willingness from people who think a lot
Spurs. We told you so.
He's just the VP. He's no Elon Musk now. He's got third place billing. He won useful standing. He say 1 and 1 and 1 is 3. Can't get rid of Trump, cause then the prez I will be all together right now. Blame JD.
I want more babies in the United States of America.
I think we better put a cover on that couch over there. Good Lord. It's JD Babs. Oh, he's going after the dog now. Oh, he's going after the dogs. They're eating the dogs. They're eating the cats.
The abduction and rendition of Kilmar Abrego Garcia has captured the national imagination, but I want everyone to get a broader picture of what these mass deportations look like. It's not exactly a surprise that this is going on. The Republican National Convention was replete with signs, people holding them up, mass deportation now, mass deportation now. And Donald Trump, of course, campaigned on this idea that the country was just overrun with criminal aliens, criminal gang members, MS-13, Tren de Aragua, coming to get us, coming to kill all the white women. And so this desperate, desperate ploy worked, got millions of Americans to support the Republican ticket, and now they are making good on their promise, rounding up every brown person they can find with tattoos, claiming that they're dangerous criminals with no trial, no due process, human trafficking them to our gulag down there in El Salvador. You've heard the stories, in addition to Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the story of Andre Hernandez, the gay hairdresser who's down there, the story of Merwell Gutierrez, the young man who wasn't even being looked for, 19-year-old who was just picked up because they were looking for someone else and said, oh yeah, just grab him anyway. So many horror stories we're hearing of actual U.S. citizens that are having difficulty, people who were born here in the United States and merely because they got the wrong color skin are getting rousted by our Gestapo. And I wanted to tell you a couple of these stories because we've heard all of these high profile stories. We've heard of the people that get abducted, trafficked, renditioned down to our torture gulag, or the cases like Rumeysa Ozturk, the PhD student who was abducted off of the streets for merely writing an op-ed that the government disagrees with. They didn't like her point of view. Or Mahmoud Khalil, a protester on Colombia, who a lot of people disagree with his protests and his tactics in protesting. But the fact that he has a differing point of view is not enough to abduct this guy and rendition him to some facility somewhere. So we've heard a lot of these stories. I just want to tell you a couple more. And this one, first of all, let me give you the official response on this particular story. This is what the government was telling us about this man's particular story. The man's name is Jose Hermosillo. And this is the government's point of view on the story. The narrative being pushed about Jose Hermosillo is false. On April 8th, Hermosillo approached Border Patrol in Tucson and stated that he had entered the U.S. illegally through Nogales. He said he wanted to turn himself in and completed a sworn statement identifying as a Mexican citizen who had entered unlawfully. He was processed and appeared in court on April 11th. Afterward, he was held by the U.S. Marshals in Florence, Arizona. A few days later, his family presented documents showing U.S. citizenship. The charges were dismissed, and he was released to his family. This arrest was the direct result of Hermosillo's own actions and statements. Okay, so this guy on the 8th comes through Tucson, says that he was an illegal who came through Nogales, Mexico. He's processed and appears in court on April 11th, so he's held for 3 days. And then a few days later, his family presents documents. Doesn't say how many days later. The charges are dismissed. He's released to his family. So, I don't know. Let's say a week. This guy picked out because he declared he was an illegal. So, he was held for a week before he was able to be let go because he wasn't illegal. He was born in the United States. That's the government's stand on the case of Jose Hermosillo. The people at Popular Information, on the other hand, managed to get in touch with Jose Hermosillo, and this is their report. Quote, in an interview with Popular Information, his first with any media outlet, Hermosillo said the DHS's account was false. According to Hermosillo, he was visiting his girlfriend's family in Tucson from his house in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Several hours before his arrest, Hermosillo was transported to a hospital in Tucson by ambulance after suffering from a seizure. He has a New Mexico state ID, but did not take it with him during the medical emergency. After being released from the hospital following treatment, Hermosillo did not know how to return to where he was staying. He approached the Border Patrol officer because he was looking for someone to help him. Quote, I saw a car and I asked him for help, end quote, Hermosillo said. He told the officer that he was staying in Tucson. You're not from here? Do you have your papers? The officer said, according to Hermosillo. When the officer asked where he was from, Hermosillo told the officer, New Mexico. The officer then accused Hermosillo of lying. Don't make me out like I'm stupid, the officer said. I know you're from Mexico. After that, Hermosillo said he was arrested. Hermosillo said that he never told the officer he was born in Mexico, never told him he was a citizen of Mexico, never told him he entered the country illegally. And he would not have said those things because they are not true. He signed the transcript released by DHS because the officer ordered him to sign everything. But Hermosillo did not read it because he cannot read. According to Hermosillo's girlfriend, Grace Hernandez, Hermosillo has a learning disability and can only write his name. Hermosillo said he did not graduate from high school and dropped out after the 10th grade. The officer also signed the document, which said Hermosillo read the document or had it read to him, but Hermosillo said no one read him the documents. Other documents created by the officer have inaccuracies. For example, the criminal complaint says that Hermosillo was detained at or near Nogales, Arizona, but Hermosillo was detained in Tucson, which is more than 70 miles from Nogales. John Mennell, a spokesperson for the U.S. Border Patrol, said that was an unintentional error. Hermosillo said he was detained with about 15 other men in a cell at the Florence Correctional Center. He was served only cold food. He said he contracted the flu because, quote, they have it cold in there and everybody's getting sick, end quote. Hermosillo said he requested medicine, but was not provided with any. The lies they will tell to cover their tracks. An illiterate man with learning disabilities who had just suffered a seizure and gotten out of a hospital asking the police for help on how to get home has a week taken out of his life, thrown into a cold cell because no one would bother to get his real story, to find out what was really going on. They found a brown guy, add him to the quota, throw him in a cell. That's what your mass deportations look like. Here's another example of what your mass deportations look like. This is from an immigration court. The judge is speaking to numerous defendants who are all in court making their appearances as to whether or not they should be deported from the United States of America. Let me read from the story. Quote, the reason you're here is because the government of the United States wants you to leave the United States, Judge Ubaid Ul-Haq, presiding from a courtroom on Varick Street, told a group of about a dozen children on a recent morning via WebEx. It's my job to figure out if you have to leave, Ul-Haq continued. It's also my job to figure out if you should stay. The parties included a 7-year-old boy wearing a shirt emblazoned with a pizza cartoon, who spun a toy windmill while the judge spoke. There was an 8-year-old girl and her 4-year-old sister in a tie-dye shirt who squeezed a pink plushy toy and stuffed it into her sleeve. None of the children were accompanied by parents or attorneys, only shelter workers who helped them log on to the hearing. Immigration advocates and lawyers say an increasing number of migrant children are making immigration court appearances without the assistance of attorneys, which they say will lead to more children getting deported. This is because the administration has halted the funding of the lawyers that would help any of these children in these deportation cases. We are literally putting children on Zoom, on WebEx, in front of a judge who's trying to describe to them their rights in a courtroom proceeding as to whether or not they'll be able to stay in the United States of America, to 4-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds expected to defend themselves in a court of law against the United States government with no counsel, with no parents. This is what your mass deportations look like. I'm so angry about this because my grandkids and my great-grandkids are those 4-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old brown kids that are in danger merely from the color of their skin of this happening to them. This is real to me. I hope it's real to you. When we finally make it through this Trumpocene era and we look back at the damage that has been wrought, I have a feeling that the damage from RFK Jr. may be even worse than the damage from Donald Trump. We spoke yesterday about his appearance, his speech at the Department of Health and Human Services, where we discussed autism, ADHD, ADD, Tourette's, and so forth, saying that he'd never heard of them when he was a kid. These things weren't around when he was a kid. They weren't even around when his uncle was president. And now we have all these incidences of autism, all these incidences of these various disabilities. Must be the vaccines. Yeah, since we started vaccines, all these things have gone up. But you know what else has gone up commensurate with the diagnoses of autism? I mean, like, it's a literal, like, almost line for line, point for point, exact correlation. The sales of organic food. I saw this chart the other day. The increase in the sales for organic food match perfectly the increases in the prevalence of autism. So that must be it. It must be all the organic food. Let's get rid of the organic food and have everybody just eat, you know, Doritos from now on, and we'll get rid of the autism. That's apparently how science works these days. Correlation means causation in Trump world. Of course it doesn't. Organic foods have nothing to do with autism. Neither do vaccines have anything to do with autism or shark attacks or anything else. We have more prevalence of autism and these other disorders because we are now better at recognizing them. We are better at diagnosing them, and we're better at accepting them. That's the reasoning. But he had so much more to say at this event. I want to cover a few of the things, a couple of things he's been talking about. And one of them is talking about putting together a registry of autistic people. A registry of autistic people. I mean, how much more Nazi are we going to get before people can come right out and call it Nazi? Because this is exactly what Hitler did, is come up with tracking lists of people with various disabilities. Boy, if some of you out there that are thinking maybe you would have liked to have gotten a diagnosis of autism, an official diagnosis instead of self-diagnosing, I'll bet you're feeling better about not having gotten that done at this point. Yeah, we're going to track autism. We got to figure out which kids have autism, what's going on with the autism. Meanwhile, there is a 10-year-old boy in Indiana who is near death with kidney failure, hospitalized because he ate lettuce contaminated with the E. coli bacteria. And the FDA, that's controlled by RFK, the FDA is refusing to name which company was responsible for putting out the E. coli tainted lettuce and is closing the investigation into it and not issuing any recalls of the lettuce, citing the need to protect trade secrets. So we're going to track all the autistic kids, but we're not going to track the companies that put out poisonous food, tainted food, that put kids into the hospital. Trade secrets. Yeah, we gotta protect the businesses. We can see who the real clientele is for the Trump maladministration. We can't let the business people be inconvenienced by lawsuits. People are going to die from this. Who knows what the next outbreak of whatever is going to be, and we're going to be in the dark about it because RFK is busy tracking whether or not someone has autism, not whether or not someone catches E. coli. And the other thing I wanted to comment on that RFK's been talking about lately is the need for more babies. Oh, we don't have enough babies. Just not enough babies. Of course, they're talking about not enough white babies. Because I don't know if you've noticed this, but the population of Earth keeps going up. Like when I was a kid, there was, 4 or 5 billion people. Now there's over 8 billion. Apparently, people are fucking. People are still having kids out there. They're just not white and delightsome enough for RFK. Again, how much more Nazi, how much more eugenics, how much more natalist do these people have to be explicitly before we just out and out call them Nazis? They're already talking about birthing bonuses. We'll give moms $5,000 for having a kid. We'll give them a birthing bonus. But, we'll cut Head Start. So once that kid's born, there's no place for mom to take the kid for child care, and we'll cut WIC. So, once that kid's born, we'll have trouble getting the kid fed, and cut SNAP, and cut housing benefits, and cut medical. We're going to cut everything that would otherwise make someone want to have a kid. But we'll give mom a $5,000 birthing bonus. Gosh, that'll cover maybe some of the increased costs she'll have to pay after all of these tariffs kick in. It costs over $5,000 in America to have a kid, if you really want to do this birthing bonus thing, you'd at least make it a number that would cover the cost of the hospital to have the kid in the first place. $5,000 birthing bonus. Yeah, the other thing they brought up, this one is literally from the Nazi handbook. They want to have medals of motherhood. Yeah, medals of motherhood. They want to give a special medal for a mom based on how many kids she has. Like she has 4 kids, she gets a bronze medal. 6 kids, she gets a silver medal. 8 kids, she gets a gold medal. Who knew that the Octomom would be a gold medalist someday, right? Literally, the Nazis did exactly that. They had these different orders and medals that they would give women for birthing the white babies. Because this is what it's all about, folks. It's all about natalism, and it's all about not enough white babies. And the reason they need more white babies is if you're going to round up and kick out all the immigrants, somebody's got to have the babies. The birth rate among immigrants is much higher. And if we're going to get rid of tracking E. coli, and we're going to kill vaccines and vaccine mandates and bring back measles, mumps, rubella, pertussis, polio. We're going to bring all these diseases back. You're going to have a brood of kids, 10, 12 kids. It'll be like the old pioneer days where we don't even bother to name the infants until they hit 2 years old. You see graveyards, infant grave, baby infant Johnson. They don't even bother to give them a name. We're going to have a lot more kids because 5 or 6 of them are going to die before they hit the age of 5. But we have to have more babies. We can't have a society where we have a social safety net for old people who aren't working unless there's young people working below them to fund that social safety net. So if we're going to get rid of all the immigrants and all the kids are going to die, from easily preventable childhood diseases, why we got to get the white women having more babies. This is all about the 14 words, folks. It's all about the 14 words. And you don't know what the 14 words are. Oh, well, let me explain. Some of you don't know what the 14 words are. This is neo-Nazi stuff. First of all, if you don't know, 1488 is the Nazi number, kind of like 420 is the stoner number. And what the 1488 stands for, the 14 stands for the 14 words, and the 88 stands for Heil Hitler, because H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, so 88 stands for Heil Hitler. So if you see anybody out and about with, you know, 1488 slyly hid in some of their documents or expressions, you know they're fash. Anyway, the 14 words, if you don't know them, are: we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. That's the primary 14 words. And then the secondary 14 words is the following clause: because the beauty of the white Aryan woman must not perish from the earth. That's what this is about. RFK Jr. is trying to incentivize the fulfillment of the neo-Nazis' 14 words. It appears the work of Vice DNC Chair David Hogg in threatening to primary some of the older Democrats is working. We got the announcement this morning that the number two Democrat in the Senate, the octogenarian Democratic leader Dick Durbin, senator from Illinois, has announced he will not be running for re-election. Dick Durbin of Illinois, number two Democrat, announcing his retirement at 80 years old. He's been in Washington for 44 years. In his speech announcing his retirement, he mentions it's just time for new blood. He knows it's time to go. And isn't that refreshing? We don't have another Dianne Feinstein, another senator who's decided that it is their birthright to die in their Senate seat. No, finally, Dick Durbin doing the right thing, recognizing it's time for new blood. Thank goodness we've got this Democrat doing the right thing. And he joins a few other Democrats who are retiring. They've announced their retirement earlier. Senator Shaheen from New Hampshire, who's 78 years old, also announced her retirement after 18 years in the Senate. Peters, senator from Michigan, age 66, after three terms, 18 years. Tina Smith out of Minnesota, 66 years old. She's only been in the Senate for 8 years. She was the one that was appointed to replace Al Franken when he resigned from the Senate. And on the Republican side, Mitch McConnell, the former Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, at age 83, he'd been in the United States Congress for 42 years, finally retiring. And over on the House side, another octogenarian, Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, she's 80 years old and retiring after 26 years. And great, great news that they're choosing to retire. But again, I'm going to make my call for the term limits amendment. It's past time that we have a term limits amendment in the United States. And as far as I'm concerned, this term limits amendment should supersede the 22nd Amendment on presidential term limits as well, because it's my belief that everyone in any particular office at the federal level should be allowed to serve for 12 years in that spot, 12 years in that seat. So you run for the House. Well, the House has 2-year terms, so you can be in the House for 6 terms. Run for re-election 5 times, 6 total terms, 6 times 2, 12 years, and then you're out. You can't run for that House or any House seat anymore. We're not going to play this game either where, you know, you run for the House from one district and then move to some other district to run for the House again. No. At the House of Representatives level, no matter which state or district you come from, whether it's consecutive or you retire and come back, you get 6 terms in the House. That's it. I would also make it 12 years in the Senate. you get two terms as a senator. Now, I understand this would be a lot of turnover for the Senate, but I think there should be more turnover in a body that only holds 100 people and a body that disproportionately favors the white rural states. We should have more turnover in the Senate. And like I said, that 12 years should also apply to the president. Let's have the president be able to seek three total terms. Now, maybe we don't pass this term limit amendment until Trump is dead, but still, let's make it so the president can serve three terms. I always thought it was wrong that a president gets in and serves one term, gets the mandate for re-election, and then immediately has to be a lame duck. Imagine what it would be like if, upon winning re-election, that president who now gets that mandate of re-election has to continue to serve with an eye toward the next re-election campaign. Also, I would note that the major changes in American life and American society come about through the three consecutive terms or more that a particular party holds the White House. I've discussed this before, how the five consecutive terms of FDR and Harry S. Truman led to some of the greatest change in America as far as the New Deal and all of the programs that came along with it. And on the reverse side of the coin, the three straight terms of Reagan-Bush had a massive impact in turning the direction of the country around. So let's give presidents three possible terms to be able to set the direction of the country. And the judiciary also needs to fall under this federal term limits amendment. There's a lot of talk about having term limits for the Supreme Court justices. And every time this gets discussed, I hear them talk about an 18-year term limit for Supreme Court justices. And I don't know, let's stay consistent. I would make the term limits amendment 12 years for the justices as well. And let's have it staggered, so that those 12 years don't all come up at the same time and the entire court is having to be replaced, but stagger those 12-year terms so that every year a justice is replaced. This way, one of those presidents who managed to string three terms together throughout the end of their third term will have replaced the entire Supreme Court. That would give a little more gravity to that whole three-term president thing, wouldn't it? But I would also expand the Supreme Court. I think there ought to be 13 justices, not 9. I think that ought to be because we have 13 circuit courts, and a Supreme Court justice rides head over those circuit courts. So one circuit court per justice instead of the way it is now, where some of the justices have two or three different circuits that they're riding over. And keep that term limits amendment, that 12 years in any one position, applying to all levels of the federal judiciary. So you start at the circuit court, you can be there for 12 years. You can move up to the appellate court, you can be there for 12 years. You can move up to the Supreme Court and be there for 12 years. With my term limits amendment, we're not stopping the possibility of having massive institutional knowledge from having longevity. That House member who served for 12 years, who then moves on to the Senate to serve for 12 years, is going to know a lot about how Washington, D.C. works by that time. Same for the justice who comes up as a judge, 12 years in the circuit court, 12 years the appellate court, and then 12 years at the Supreme Court. That's 36 years behind the bench. That's my solution. Come up with a federal term limits amendment, and then we don't have to depend on the wisdom of octogenarians to know when to hang it up. There are so many devastating effects from the Trumpocene era that we're going to have to live through even long after Trump is gone. And I think one of the ones that troubles me the most is the debut of shameless politics. Donald Trump has taught politicians out there on both sides of the aisle that you can be a scumbag, you can be criminal, you can do shocking, shocking things. And in the past, this would have led you to resign, led you to seek private work, step out of the public spotlight, for the shame that you'd felt from your dalliance or corruption scandal or whatever it was. There used to be shame in politics. Hell, we were talking earlier about Tina Smith retiring, and she's only in office because Al Franken had to step down because of ill-placed Me Too accusations against him. Because Al Franken was a good man and one of the few politicians left who actually felt some measure of shame. I wish he hadn't. I wish he had taken the tack now that we're seeing in New York State, where disgraced former governor Andrew Cuomo, another victim of Me Too accusations, but ones that were absolutely deserved, man turned out to be an absolute predator scumbag, resigned in disgrace, and kudos to the woman at the press conference the other day who heckled him and yelled out, "You resigned in disgrace! Good for you." But now, in the era of no shame, Andrew Cuomo is back, running for mayor of New York City and leading in the polls among Democrats. Donald Trump has taught them that the American public has the attention span of a goldfish, and that they can overcome any of these scandals just by talking loudly and quickly, brushing it all behind them. We see this also in the disgraced former mayor of New York City, or I guess the current mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, who says he's going to run for re-election as an independent now. What the hell is wrong with the New York Democratic Party? Andrew Cuomo and Eric Adams should have no chance in these elections. But the name recognition for Cuomo and the name recognition for Adams are getting them high polling numbers and threatening to make them contenders in the ranked choice election that New York City will be holding for its mayor. I'm telling you, between New York State and all the shenanigans going on there and the fall in California of their governor, Gavin Newsom, who's taken a definite right turn with his, I guess it's now defunct podcast. I haven't heard much from it lately, where he's platforming Charlie Kirk and platforming Steve Bannon, as if these guys need more platforms, as if they're not being heard by enough people. And then his comments the other day that the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia and all the human trafficking abductions that are going on to our torture gulag are some sort of distraction from the economic issues everyone wants to talk about. I'm telling you, between the California Democrats and the New York Democrats, what is it about these supermajority Democratic states that put forth some of the worst Democratic politicians? I'm telling you, give me Tim Walz. Give me the Minnesota Democrat. Give me Andy Beshear, the Kentucky Democrat. As we start to look toward 2026 and especially 2028 in the presidential election, let's start looking to those Midwestern Democrats to lead us out. Because other than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, New York and California Democrats leave a lot to be desired. So Pope Francis met with Vice President J.D. Vance and then on the very next day passed away, as we're all well aware. So that means the cardinals of the Catholic Church are gathered in the Vatican now for their papal conclave to try to determine who will be the next pope. And you know me, folks, I don't have much love for religion. I find it all to be kind of silly. Especially when you consider in the Catholic Church, the Pope is like just one notch below Jesus, right? Like the Pope is the direct messenger to God, to Jesus, the direct spokesperson. And you'd think somebody that's got such a high regard from the maker and shaper of the entire universe and all of space-time, they'd have a better way of picking them, don't you think? Like there would be angels coming down from on high and a beam of light shining down on the guy, or he would start to levitate, or angels would come and sing. You know, there'd be some miracle to show us who the next voice of God on planet Earth is going to be. But no, it's a bunch of guys who get together in a room and have a vote. Right? So how is this all divine? It's all political. Of course, the Catholic Church is a political entity and has been for centuries, millennia even. It's just another political appointment. But it's kind of fun this time around because one of the candidates, I guess he's the Cardinal for Jerusalem, which would be an interesting appointment if he became Pope. But the fellow's name is Pizzaballa. I want this guy to win. I don't know nothing about him. I don't know nothing about any of the other people that are running for the post, but Pope Pizzaballa, I'm all for that. That sounds good. Of course, he'd change his name. He'd come up with some other name, but I'd still call him Pope Pizzaballa. They'd be cool, right? When they got them all locked in the room, they have the smoke that comes out, white smoke or black smoke, depending on whether or not they've chosen the new Pope yet. I think they ought to liven it up a little bit. Maybe put in some techno music. Right about now, the funk Pope brother. Check it out now, the funk Pope brother. Right about now, the funk Pope brother. Well, all right. Good luck to the new Pope, whoever that might be. And let's hope it's Pizzaballa. For our regular Boycott Idaho segment, where I remind you to avoid the handmade state. You can check out all 63 reasons why you should avoid Idaho at my blog at radicalrust.com/Idaho. And in particular, let's boycott the Idaho potato. No red state is more singularly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. So forego that loaded baked potato. Get yourself a nice salad. Your body will thank you for it. Today in Boycott Idaho, I want to talk about an incident that happened about a month ago, actually, in Idaho, and it has to do with anti-Tesla protests that were going on. And at the anti-Tesla protests, first of all, the scariest part about this is how the protest had 30 people that showed up at a Tesla dealership outside of Meridian, Idaho. 30 people showed up to protest Elon Musk and protest Tesla. On the other hand, 200 MAGA counter-protesters showed up against them. So understand, in Idaho, when you go out to protest something on the liberal side of things, and you're anywhere but the state capital in Boise, where like all the liberals live, you are taking a huge risk when you protest. So there was this protest, 30 anti-Tesla people, 200 MAGAs coming to protest. And a 49-year-old man had just parked and exited his vehicle when 70-year-old Christopher Talbot flipped him off. It says made an obscene gesture, so I'm assuming flipped off the 49-year-old guy, and then drove at him and hit him with his car. Protester got hit by a car by the other protester, the 70-year-old man. And the victim drove himself to the hospital, had non-life-threatening injuries. He was treated and released. The victim got Christopher Talbot's license plate, and that's when they found him at his home in Meridian and arrested him on one count of aggravated battery. Now, the surprise part of this story for you: Christopher Talbot was one of the anti-Tesla protesters, and the guy he hit was one of the pro-MAGA guys. So let me just reiterate. Don't run over people with your car. Don't run over people with your car. I don't care if you're on my side or on their side. You do not run over protesters with your car. That being said, our side isn't the side that's putting window stickers up that say all lives splatter with little stick figures being run over by your car. Our side is not the one passing bills that indemnify people who run over protesters with their car if they feel in danger. So I do want to call out the guy on our side, Christopher Talbot. Just because you're on our side and you're against Elon Musk and Tesla doesn't give you the right to hit people with your car. But let's also not forget which side it is that started it. Today in the rant, I want to talk about the economic tsunami that is coming for the United States of America. I've made this comparison before about how right now, as you look at the news and you read the stories of the stock market manipulation that's going on, the pump and dump scheme that Donald Trump is operating by announcing, oh, there's going to be tariffs. Oh, wait, there's no tariffs. Oh, yes, there is tariffs. No, wait, there's going to be a pause on tariffs. Oh, I'm going to fire the Fed chair. Oh, no, I'm not going to fire the Fed chair. So he and his billionaire buddies can drop the price of stocks to a low and then buy the dip and then make the announcement and then the stock prices surge once again. So it's all a manipulation scheme. And I've made the comment about how this is an economic tsunami waiting to hit the United States, how you go out on the beach before a tsunami, you look out and the sign a tsunami is coming is that the ocean will suddenly recede. Like 50, 60 feet, just way, way away. That's the tsunami building up the energy and gathering up the water, right? And then the next thing you know, the tsunami hits, breaks over the beach, floods out the rest of the coastline, you know, and you've got a disaster on your hands. And some of the signs of that ocean receding are the stock market manipulations that we've seen so far. But the real sign is coming out of the supply chain people. Follow any of these blogs, they are describing a five-alarm fire. And so much of our supply chains, as we learned from the COVID pandemic, so much of the stuff that we depend on depends on these international supply chains and this just-in-time manufacturing. And we are about to experience an economy that I think is going to make us long for the good old days of COVID. Because these manufacturers don't know whether or not to invest in new technology and new factories overseas. Should I invest in that factory overseas or not if a tariff is going to still be there? Maybe I should bring that factory home and set up the factory here in America, but it's going to take 5 years to build the factory and by then, Trump won't be president, and who knows, maybe the tariffs will be gone, and then my factory in the United States can't compete with the factory over there in Vietnam. So there's uncertainty. People don't know how to plan for the future. And people here in the States, small businesses, that are ordering their supplies, their parts that they need to build whatever it is they build, they don't know whether to make the large purchases now, or they've already made large purchases, but they can't afford to bring them over because now the large purchase also includes a massive tariff. So just wait. You see, come around June, you head into the grocery store and you're going to notice, hey, how come we can't find all the produce that we normally find? Where's all the berries and where's all the tropical fruits? You're going to see that in car dealerships. You're going to see the price of cars massively spike. Everything that we depend on is either going to be unavailable, out of stock, or massively overpriced. And then with all the layoffs that we're seeing, all the firings in the federal government, and the layoffs that are going to happen because of the supply chain disruptions, we're not just facing the possibility of another recession. We're facing something that could be as big as the Great Depression, as devastating to the United States and world economy as a Great Depression. And I hope you're getting ready for it. I hope you're stocking up. Buy lots of beans, canned goods. Try to put something away because, folks, it's going to get bad. And that, of course, is exactly what the fascists want. They want hyperinflation or stagflation. They want massive amounts of unemployment. Because be ready, once the economic tsunami hits, it won't be their fault. Oh, no. Not their fault. It'll be the fault of all those immigrants. It'll be the fault of all those trans athletes. It'll be the fault of those autistic kids and the vaccines. They'll point the finger at everyone but themselves. And with all the unemployment, all the devastation, you can imagine there will probably be protests, there will probably be riots. I wouldn't be surprised to see the rise of vigilante patrols, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, setting up checkpoints at places, being even officially deputized by the Trump administration. It's going to get brutal out there, folks. But if we stand together and if we continue to protest nonviolently, we continue to show up at the town hall meetings, we continue to run for office, there is hope. We can make it out of this. Our forefathers made it out of the Great Depression. Our forefathers won World War II. The American spirit is still here. There are still plenty of patriotic Americans who really know what patriotism means, who really understand that America is the melting pot. It's e pluribus unum. It's all of us together. It's not blood and soil. It's not what color your skin is or what religion you are. Anyone can be an American. They stand up for our principles of equal justice under the law, the rule of law, and our civil liberties. I'm not ready to give up on America yet, and I hope you'll stay with me throughout this podcast journey as we continue to fight for the restoration of the American experiment, the greatest democracy this planet has ever seen. Well, folks, that's all the time I've got this morning for the podcast. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. Except for that bass line, which was written by Paul McCartney, and the song Come Together, written by Lennon and McCartney, used for parody purposes under fair use, the United States Copyright Act, as well as clips that were heard within there, also used under fair use. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com and nowhere else. And for our post-credits scene, I just want to let you know about my pregnant puppy. Yes, one of my little chihuahuas, Susie Q, is pregnant, and we knew about this a few weeks ago because, her and little Kenny, our other chihuahua, we caught him getting it on, as dogs will do. Well, she's just starting to show now, and it's just adorable. Her belly's getting all big. We got to take her in for x-rays and such. So we don't know how many puppies we'll be having. Chihuahuas usually have one or two, sometimes three. But if you're interested in a chihuahua puppy, and you have some way to pick it up here from the state of Jefferson, I'll have a couple for you, maybe. Just check them out. I've got their full papers and everything. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.
take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.